100 years ago today, there were 68 men that stood up for a roll call. Where did that take place? Yes, it was at Beaumont Hamel, near one of the French villages. 100 years ago, yesterday, it was celebrated across Newfoundland, one of the greatest disasters in Newfoundland history, as 324 of our young Newfoundland men died and 386 were wounded. Only 68 the next day stood up for roll call. It was a real disaster. And the First World War was a trench warfare, and there was one Allied trench facing three trench German lines, and the responsibility of the British and the Newfoundland Regiment was to break through at a place called Beaumont Gamel, which was just on the other side of the first German line. And they attempted to do so, but misread it so badly. But what you may not know, that even though there was 324 Newfoundlanders killed and 386 wounded, there was 20,000 British killed and 37,000 British that were wounded. That is a tragedy. Can you imagine? Now, you think about the young men as they gathered at the war, probably mostly in St. John's, and taking off, going over to Europe. These young men would be full of thinking about adventure and making friends and finding new sights and seeing things over in Europe. Very few of them probably thought seriously that they were going to meet their final moment at Beaumont. There's something about us that we have that anticipation that we're going to live forever, and there's little likelihood that we're going to meet such a tragedy. And life just comes our way and has those kind of moments that bring us around to the reality that we're not immortal, that we are mortal, and we will, unless the Lord comes, have a moment in which we will face our eternal God and going to sleep. I thought I would take a look at three stories today in the Bible that relate to this type of thinking. And the first one is in the book of Luke chapter 12, and it's a parable Jesus told about a man who had the thinking of, I'm going to live life and it's going to be unending. And what we can learn from this parable, and we'll look at two other particular texts as it reflects on this story as well. So if you look at Luke chapter 12, and we're going to pick it up at verse 13. Luke 12, 13, and it's, the caption in my Bible is the parable of the rich fool. There is also a story about a rich who, other places in the Bible. Rich young ruler. Here, this one's called a rich fool. Why was he called a fool? It says, then one in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. He said to him, man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? And he said to them, take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of things he possesses. Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barn and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will these things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. So this man in his thinking was, I have everything going for me, and I have life to live, and this is how I'm going to do it. But as you take a look at this story, it is interesting what we can learn, principles that we can apply to our lives today. If you pick up in verse 16, It's called a parable, so Jesus is trying to teach a lesson. And in verse 21, he tells the lesson he wants us to learn. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward whom? God. So Jesus wants us to be rich towards God and not focused on self. So he starts off and he first paints a picture about a prosperous man. And you notice there are what it says about this prosperous man. First in verse 16, it says that he is already a rich man. He's not a man in poverty. He's not a man in need. He is already a man who has a good bank account and he has possessions. Then, not only that, we find, if you come down in verse 17, what it says about him, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So what does that tell you? He's not only rich, but what? He already has things stored in his barns. So he's not leaning to poverty. He's not moving towards poverty. He already is rich, and he has plenty in his barns. So from a perspective of a farmer, he's in pretty good shape. Besides having no room in the barns, what is the third component that we find about this rich man that makes a foolish decision? He's rich, he has lots in his barns, and he has lots where else? He has a bumper crop. And so all that's taking place, do you think he feels pretty good about himself? He feels pretty good. I'm prosperous. I have plenty in the bank. I have my barns full, and I have a good harvest. And then it mentions in verse 17 that he had a special moment. And it says he thought within himself and said, what shall I do? What is interesting here is God does not verbally tell him what to do. Even though after he makes a decision, down in verse 20, God says to him, which shows you that as we accomplish, as we have benefits in life, God has given instruction in his word how to respond, but he gives you and me the freedom to choose. We have the privilege to choose, and it's not for me to tell you or for you to tell someone else. You yourself have to make decisions on what you will decide to do with what you have. God has given the rain, the sunshine. He's given prosperity. He's given adversity, yes. But in moments that we're looking at here, in a moment of plenty, the person had to think within himself. Now, he reflects and he says in verse 18, I've come to a decision. I know what I will do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. So what did he feel about his crops and his goods? That which was in the barn, what did he feel about the crops out in the field? They are mine. They are mine. Does that get you in trouble sometimes? When you think of me and mine, God has said we are to think of others too. We are to think about his work. We are not to focus on everything is mine. I worked for it. I earned it. It is mine. It is true you've worked for it, and it's a good probability that your prosperity is the result of your hard work, but we are not to see it as ours. It is a trust. We are stewards. So he thought, did he have other options? Did he have other options? He thought with himself and he came up with the conclusion, this is my best option. I will pull down. Now, from a prosperity point of view, pulling down to build big barns, bigger barns, may seem to be a possibility. But that decision was not related to making sure that he would have a secure financial position for his family. He already was what? Rich. He already had his barns filled. He had a bumper crop. Was his only option to pull down those barns and to make sure they had bigger and more. Other options, we know from studying the Bible that God indicates to us that we are to be interested in the needs of others and we are to share our prosperity with others. Did that go through his mind? It must have gone through his mind, because he would see the need needs of people around him. But he chose to block that all out and decide, I'm going to focus on me and mine. And even though he had the option to help the widow, to help the poor, the disadvantaged, he chose to look after himself. Then it mentions, after he had made his decision of what he was going to do, it mentions in verse 19, I will say to my soul, my very being, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. You know, it's good to plan for the future. It is important that we make sure that we do our best to see that our future is secure. We have no idea what's going to come our way. And so it's reasonable to set aside those investments, those RSPs or whatever, so that it's reasonable to have something for your future securities. Nothing wrong with that. But his conclusion about investment for securing the future went one step further. It was not just security. What was it? He says, I will take my ease, eat, drink, and be merry. So it was not a security only perspective that this man, as he looked into his future that he thought would be unending, as I look into my future, I just want ease and relaxation and pleasure, and that's what I'm looking for. So he said that to himself. So his focus was not security, his focus was a selfish for me and mine. And when God evaluated it all, remember it's a parable. Jesus told a parable against what? Covetousness. Covetousness. And if you think about it, every once in a while, probably if we all gave our personal testimonies, there's a good chance that most of us would say, I wouldn't mind to have a little ease, a little putting my feet up with some lemonade once in a while with the pressure that I'm under. That looks inviting. But it's one thing to look at it for a break and a little relaxation. It's another to say, this is what I want and my goal is for my future. If you talk to people who choose to do that, many times they don't live very long in just a self-indulgent mindset. There's something about activity, something about sharing that's so very important. Now the Lord evaluates. You're living as though you're immortal. You're living only for yourself. You're living without regard for the needs of others. And all that I've entrusted to you, you have not seen as important in stewardship. You already have plenty. You have things in store. There's no threat of you going into poverty. And you have a bumper crop, and you think only of yourself instead of sharing with others. You have not properly evaluated your immortality. You are immortal. And God says, this night, your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? All that you've worked for is gone in one night. And how many people have said, I would give all my money if I could have my health back? There are things that are more invaluable than living in ease. And God has presented a parable to us concerning that sense of immortality. It's so easy for us to fall in that trap. I want a life of ease. I'm not sure how it is here in Newfoundland, but I did bump into a Nova Scotia pastoring that the goal of some young people was to have something happen so they could get on a disability stipend coming in. If I just get a disability stipend, then I'd be set for life. And this would be a young person. I'm thinking of one in particular who's less than 20 years of age. And he said, a life that gives me money that I can do, I can lay around and watch TV and play video games and do what I enjoy doing. And God has a word, it's his word, thou fool, you're not weighing out life issues properly. Happiness comes in sharing with others. Joy comes in fulfillment when you're involved with moving things forward for the people, your community, for your church. And so this is the first story that we can take a look at, and Jesus gives a parable. As you think about your sense of immortality, remember that we are mortal until Jesus comes. Because what does it say when he comes? It says in 1 Corinthians 15 that we will be changed in the moment, the twinkling of the eye. This mortal must put on immortality. It comes when Jesus comes. So we do have that sense that we are going to receive it. We don't have it now. But between now and then, we lean on God to be good stewards. We are in this world to make a difference. The second story I want to take a look at is in James. James chapter 4, where James addresses the same concept of how do I face my future? What should be involved as I plan for tomorrow? What should be my thinking as I make important decisions about my future? And it picks up in chapter 4, verses 13 to verse 17. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city. We'll spend a year there. We'll buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor and appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Therefore, so that's the conclusion. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. Well, the fact that it gives a therefore, it throws back on the story. So James uses the therefore and says, to him who knows to do good and doesn't do it, to him it is sin. The individuals that were making this plan apparently was not in harmony with doing the good. They had a different motive. And their motive was, hey, we want to make money. We'll go in this, we'll plan on this, and we'll spend the next year there selling. And God through James says, not so. You know what you should be doing, and you're not doing that. Therefore, it is sin for you. And you're not realizing that when you look at your life, that it's like a vapor. And you cannot say, I will do this for the next year, because you do not realize all that's going to take place. And you need to weigh out, if the Lord wills, I want to make a decision into my next year and ask God, what is his will in this next year? If you just say, I'm going to do this, without taking God into account and not doing what he has revealed to you, what is your next move, decision that you and I should make, then it says you do not realize that life is like a vapor. Now, when you take a look at the book of Ecclesiastes, it's interesting to notice there how the wise man Solomon viewed all of this. If you go back to the book of Ecclesiastes, the whole story of Ecclesiastes is to bring to young people's minds the realization that, hey, you need to put into perspective life. Put into perspective. In chapter 11, in verse 9, the wise man tells us in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your own eyes. So there's the freedom of choice. I want to encourage you to make that choice. But remember, in all your choices, what are you to keep in account? God will bring you into judgment. But in knowing all these things, you'll give an account. So sometimes it's so easy for the me generation, me and my where I am now, to think I make my decision, I'm independent of everyone, I will take care of me and mine, and I want ease and relaxation all the days of my life. God says, don't live that way. I want you to live on different principles. You are here to make a difference. You are here to live a life of service. You are here to make life easier for others. You're here to advance my cause. If you focus on me and mine, you're like a vapor that will vanish away, and you're like the parable, quote, a fool who does not really see the important issues in life. Finally, I want to take a look at one sad illustration in 2 Timothy of a man who had it in his hand, and it was going so well, then he made a decision that is recorded for us to learn from. Because today we can learn from the record. We have life today, but there will be a moment that we will not have life. And what record do we want of us? And it's found in 2 Timothy chapter 4. In 2 Timothy chapter 4, you recall how in verse 8, Paul, as he's in Rome, realizes his death is near. And he writes that beautiful verse in verse 7, I fought the good fight, I finished the race, I've kept the faith. Which is a testimony of how he is committed. He's going forward. He wants God's work to go forward. He wants to make a difference. He wants to give life and life abundant to his hearers. Then he says, finally, there is laid up for me. Not like the fool who says, laid up for me is my wealth and my goods, and I'm going to live and be merry. But it's laid up for me is what? A crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who loved his appearing. So he says, laid up for me. And each of us has to answer that question. What is laid up for me? What's in my future? What decisions am I making today that contribute to my future? Is it my crops, my lands, my bank accounts, so that I can have ease? And then what? Or is it being a good steward? Like he says, I've given myself as an offering in verse 6. But right following that is a sad story. After he tells you about himself, he gives a very sad statement in verse 10. After saying, be diligent to come to me quickly, he says this, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. And you say, wow. Now, he mentions over a little in verse 16, he had his defense. At my first defense, no one stood with me, but all forsook me. May it not be charged against them. So he's in Rome. It was easy to be shamed as a Christian because Christians are being persecuted. And he said, when I had my first defense before Nero, no one stood with me. He says, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. And when you take a look at who this Demas was, just turn two couple pages in Philemon. And Philemon just has one chapter. And you come towards 23 and 24. And it talks about Demas. Epaphras, my fellow prisoner in Christ Jesus, greets you. So someone who is in prison with him greets. As does Mark. Isn't that beautiful to see Mark's name? Paul embracing Mark. Aristarchus, but who's the next word? Demas, Luke, and Demas is identified as a what? A fellow laborer. So Demas is a fellow laborer, just like Luke and Timothy, the other important leaders of the first century church. Demas was a fellow laborer. So he was one that responded to the gospel. He is one that loved the Lord. He is one that went into persecution. He was there in Rome when Paul was being persecuted. And if you come over to Colossians, the book of Colossians, we have another text on Demas, and that's in chapter 4, verse 14. And here he's associated again with Luke. And it says, Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas greet you. So Demas was one that was in the inner circle with Paul. Demas is one that was in the cutting edge of the gospel going forward. He was out there when it was tough. And he went all through that. But then you go back to the book of Timothy. In a moment when Paul was going to be sacrificed and martyred, for his belief at a time when it was critical decisions for the leaders to decide for their future. Will I stay by and be loyal, or will I not be? And Demas, a fellow laborer, Demas, one in the inner circle, made a decision concerning his future. It says, Demas has forsaken me, loving rather this present world. So he went to Thessalonica. What is it like to run away from the Lord? What is it like to go into your future and not have the Lord? When you have all of those beautiful messages in your heart, when you have gone through so much for the Lord, what went through Demas's heart when he was in Thessalonica, when he went by the Adventist church? He'd have to try to avoid that. What would happen in the marketplace? He would bump into someone that he knew from before. Once you have stepped away, once you've made a decision not to include the Lord into your future, you have to constantly avoid those things that remind you. You cannot live with contentment, because there's always things that will be there to bring to your attention what you've left. And when you see signs developing in the world, and you see events taking place, when you see an accident, you hear about the medical, that might happen to me, or is my end coming? You live in a fear, whereas if you have sealed your future like Paul, he says, I've fought a good fight. I've kept the faith. I finished my course. I didn't live for me and mine. I lived so that I could be a blessing to others. I lived my resources to be there to be an assistance and help to others. And so today, each of us have the privilege of considering where we are and looking into our future. All of us have a sense of immortality, that it's always going to continue as it has been. But we all know that's not true. We do not have that immortality until Jesus comes. But we too have to do like that rich young farmer. We have to consider the choices that we will make. I encourage you today to make the choice that Jesus taught from that parable, that we live to be a blessing for God's work. May the Lord be with each of you as you make those important decisions around your life. Lord, let us lay up our treasures in heaven, where moth and rust does not corrupt. We ask, Lord, that we will look at the realities of our decisions. We've all had things that have been new. We've all come to the point that we've thrown it in the garbage. And we realize that the investment of all that we do, we want it to be, yes, practical, take care of the things of life, but the focus will not be on things. It'll not be on ease. It'll never be balanced in service. Sure, take care of our needs, but to be a blessing. And Jesus told us how to do that. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things be taken care of, because God knows what our needs are. So help us to focus on you first, Lord. Help us to focus on being a blessing. Help us to focus on using our energies to further your work, to care for family, to make a difference. And use us, Lord, for your glory. May we not be consumers, but contributors. I pray in Jesus' name. Amen.